Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Republican Ohio House Speaker Larry Householder in late May sent a letter to the Ohio Library Council demanding an end to drag queen educational programming at public libraries. Householder wrote that, quote, taxpayers aren't interested in seeing their hard-earned dollars being used to teach teenage boys how to become drag queens, end quote. A program in Licking County was canceled and another in Delaware County was rescheduled and relocated to another venue. The controversy has raised questions about how libraries are used as public spaces. Joining us now is Julia Applegate. She's director of the Equitas Health Institute. That's an LGBTQ health center in Columbus. Julia Applegate, what did you think when you first saw the letter?
Wow, that was a hard letter to read. I thought immediately that it was inflamed and misunderstanding the intent of the events that were scheduled. It felt to me as a very politicizing something that wasn't political in nature. So I think that's part of what it felt like to me was an opportunity to attack a marginalized community that has been marginalized historically in so many ways at a particularly bad time. This is the month that the LGBTQ community globally celebrates our pride and the progress that we've made. And to attack events that were a celebration, really, of our unique culture and history felt personal and it felt hate-filled.
Drag queens in libraries is not new.
No, it's not new at all.
The New Yorker Hour just did something on an event in New York City, which I guess it's New York City, whatever. But this happens in Ohio. We heard from a listener yesterday that her grandson does a drag queen reading hour at a library in Toronto. So what do you make of this?
Well, I think what I've seen mostly has been these drag queen story hours, right?
Yeah.
And that's to me a really loving way to learn about the drag queen culture. And there's also a drag king culture that is not as widely known, but
drag culture.
Yeah, yeah. Drag culture, like recognizing that is a part of the LGBTQ community and it demystifies that culture, taking drag queens out of a bar space and putting them in public spaces that, you know, involve reading to children, I think is a really important way to affirm a drag experience. And there's many different ways to be drag queens. It's a cultural expression. So I think it personalizes that experience and demystifies it.
There is heightened awareness of the issue of drag art, given that Nina West of Columbus made it pretty far along in RuPaul's Drag Race, won the Miss Congeniality Award. What is your sense about people's growing awareness of this?
Well, I think it's a mixed bag. So I think anytime you take a subculture and suddenly the kind of mainstream culture becomes aware of a subculture that has a really long, rich history and is a culture that grew out of expressions of marginalization and oppression, that a couple of things can happen. I mean, a drag queen culture is celebratory and it's flamboyant and it's there's comedy behind it. There's lots of elements. It's theater.
Kind of like the boys in the high school talent show.
Yeah, and in some ways, yeah. I mean, it's theater. It's a way of performing identity, and it's not new at all. But I think with RuPaul's Drag Race to have launched it out of just, you know, the dark bars and the subculture into the mainstream, you know, way of thinking and understanding the world, it's been great because drag queens now can do this and get paid, you know, and have jobs and travel the country and get accolades for their hard work. The bad side of it, I think, is these kinds of pushbacks from people who don't understand what drag is all about, why people perform drag, and people who are, frankly, homophobic and transphobic, and they're using that fear of LGBTQ identities and history and culture as a political platform to spew hate.
And you mean transphobic by, you mean transgender phobic?
Yes, yes. I mean, you know, a drag queen is simply somebody who has one identity and they are crossing over that identity in a form of cultural expression. It doesn't have anything to do with what they're doing, how they're living their full-time lives. It's not a trans identity. It's a performance. But I think that some people will conflate expressions of gender that are, that are different than the mainstream expression of gender, that challenge those norms, and they conflate that with a transgender identity. So their phobias and their fears are really about, if you are male identified, you should behave in a masculine way. If you're female identified, you should identify in a feminine way. And any transverse or opposition to that is a threat to people. So, and that kind of, it conflates an art and cultural expression with a lived identity. And that's a problem.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. That's Julia Applegate. She's director for the Equitas Health Institute. That's an LGBTQ health center in Columbus. We're talking about the controversy stemming from a letter that the House Speaker of the House of Ohio, Larry Householder, a Republican, sent the Ohio Library Council, criticizing programming that featured drag queens teaching the art of drag to area youngsters. If you have a question or comment, if you want to weigh in on this issue about what should a library be doing and how this may or may not be a departure from the mission of a library, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Jeremy Pelzer of cleveland.com has been covering the issue. He joins us now. Welcome to the show, Jeremy.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for having me.
Larry Householder made that letter public immediately. What was the deal with that?
Well, it's Larry Householder, you know, he's a Perry County Republican. This is just red meat for his supporters, you know. Larry Householder is pretty conservative, and I'm sure he genuinely, you know, supports what he's saying in the letter. I don't question that. Mm-hmm. But this is, you know, a no-lose issue for him.
He said, quote, taxpayers aren't interested in seeing their hard-earned dollars being used to teach teenage boys how to become drag queens, end quote. There was a veiled threat in there, some people have said. What do you make of it?
I think that anytime the Speaker of the House tells someone to cut it out, something out, that of course there's an implied threat there. You know, he's one of the most powerful people in the state, and to say something that directly obviously insinuates that there's going to be consequences if they don't follow his instructions.
That is, funding can be cut.
He has power of the purse, because especially now they're running the state budget through, and, you know, he has a major say in how millions and billions of dollars are spent, and, you know, that includes Ohio's library funding as well.
Hmm. Well, how has the letter landed so far? What have been the responses to it?
Well, obviously Democrats have not been thrilled with the Speaker's letter. The Democrats have actually had a better working relationship this session with the Speaker than they have past Speakers. But, for example, Minority Leader Amelia Sykes invited Speaker Householder to the Akron Pride Festival last weekend. The Speaker did not take her up on her offer, but they've been saying that this is an issue of free speech, but they haven't perhaps strongly denounced him as perhaps they could have. They've just kind of expressed their displeasure over it.
What about the fund? I mean, what do we know about state control of the purse strings? We know they've been cutting funding to libraries over the last 15 or so years. Libraries have had to seek local levies and stuff for the first time ever in the last 15 or so years. But you said that he holds the purse strings, but has the state ever punished a library for anything like this that we know of?
Oh, no, definitely not for LGBT events, at least that I can remember. Maybe one of your listeners can remember something in the distant past, but there's been nothing like this for a specific activity or event held. I can't think of a single instance when state funding has been withheld because of that.
And then the Ohio Library Council, that was who the letter was addressed to. How has the council responded? By the way, the council said that they couldn't join us for the show today.
Well, obviously the council has responded that this is an issue of free speech. They wrote a response back to Householder, basically saying that, you know, we hear you, but you know, this is an issue of free expression.
And have you talked to them? Are they worried about funding issues?
I have not talked to them about specifically about funding issues. One idea that this is sort of a red meat kind of political. Stunt is too strong a word, but, you know, there haven't been, besides the initial salvo exchange of views, there haven't been a whole lot of follow-ups. It's not like the speaker, in fact, even when the speaker was asked about it last week, he was like, well, I've said all I want to say about it. So this doesn't seem to be a political controversy that's really lasting. He's not, I think this is more of a public show than anything else.
Julia Applegate, is that how you see it?
No, I don't. No, I think that this is this kind of behavior and these kind of statements, if you take it out of the political realm and into LGBTQ individuals' lives and the people that love the LGBTQ community, it's a direct attack. It's a hit on our identity. It's fear-mongering. It is a threat. It's you're not good enough. In the one month of the year where the global attention really is on LGBTQ identities, we get slapped in the face by the Speaker of the House saying this needs to stop immediately. And it's an affront.
And it did
and it
stop.
Hurts.
And it did stop immediately. Does the Ohio Library Council, Jeremy Pelzer, have any control over what local libraries do?
Well, one thing I want to say is, I'm not saying it's not an attack on the LGBT community. I'm saying in terms of state funding that it doesn't seem to be a direct threat towards state funding for libraries. Is all I'm saying. As far as the Ohio Library Council is concerned, I haven't specifically talked to them about funding, but I haven't heard since the initial exchange of letters. I haven't heard of anyone bringing up the issue, which is a sign that perhaps funding is not as threatened as people initially thought it might be.
But does the Ohio Library Council have any control over what local branches of libraries, local libraries do?
Not legally. They can't say cut it out, but obviously they can strongly express their opinion, as far as I know.
We heard about the two events getting canceled or rescheduled in Delaware and Licking counties. Do you know, Jeremy, has anyone reported whether other libraries and other parts of the state, it's a big state, have scheduled and then canceled similar types of events?
Well, the Speaker's Householder was directly referencing those two events. He hadn't heard of any others. I haven't heard of any others either, but those were the two events that he was specifically referring to.
And Julia Applegate, from where you sit at Equitas Health Institute, have you heard of any others?
Yes, we've actually been invited to speak at least one other event. The event was framed as a safe space conversation for LGBTQ individuals, and the turnout was low. I was actually at that event, and I think that it was immediately in the aftermath of these cancellations. I'm not quite sure exactly why that is, but I do know I had a conversation with the staff at that library, and it was very clear that the event itself was framed ambiguously so as not to draw attention to the subject matter because of the concern of how it would be met.
We're going to continue our conversation. We're going to get to calls. If you have a question or comment about this issue, you can join the conversation. The number to call is 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And I want to thank Jeremy Pelzer of Cleveland.com for joining us. Thanks so much, Jeremy.
Thanks a lot, Ann.
And we'll continue. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Thank you.
WOSU Public Media's newest podcast series, Rivet, young people share their unique pathways to professional success. Listen to This American Graduate Project. Find Rivet now in WOSU's mobile app or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Dan Fisher. Republican House Speaker Larry Householder in late May sent a letter to the Ohio Library Council demanding an end to the drag queen educational programming at public libraries. Householder wrote that, quote, taxpayers aren't interested in seeing their hard-earned tax dollars being used to teach teenage boys how to become drag queens, end quote. A program in Licking County was canceled, rescheduled to an event at the Denison University. In Delaware, another event was rescheduled and relocated to another venue. The controversy has raised questions about how libraries are used as public spaces. What's the philosophy, the ethics, the theory that goes into what the role of a library plays in community life? We've been listening to and talking with Julia Applegate. She's director of Equitas Health Institute. That's an LGBTQ health center in Columbus. Sasha Griffin is a university archivist and special collections librarian at Denison University. She's not related to how the event was relocated there, however. She recently criticized Householder's letter in a column published in the Newark Advocate. Sasha Griffin joins us now. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
You wrote in your column that the library is the crucial glue that holds communities together. And how does that apply in this case?
One of the reasons why libraries exist, especially public libraries, is not just to connect people with information, but also to connect people with other people. And especially with when you think about marginalized groups or groups that don't have a lot of representation, the library is an important community gathering place that can tie those people together. And that really is the definition of how communities are built.
We're not talking about what the are there any restrictions that exist? Who decides what's too much and what's not enough?
Well, as librarians are trained to become librarians, this is a really interesting and important topic that's usually always taught in a library school on how to sort of manage those community relationships with the core concept of libraries being for everyone. As a public library, they represent a constituency themselves that is everybody that is in their region. So a lot of librarians are taught, and the American Library Association also makes very important statements that libraries really cannot discriminate against who can or cannot use those services. So to a degree, the people who are in charge of that programming and those decisions are the library administration team, and the librarians who run that and who are those managers are professionally trained to be able to handle these types of questions.
What if it's a question of a racist organization, a white supremacy mm-hmm. organization? What about that?
Again, I would probably just default to whatever that library administration team makes the decision, because they know their community the best. And within the community library system, if they serve their library users and their community that specifically engages with them, they will know whether or not it will be serving their public. And so to a degree, a lot of those local decisions are important that they're made locally, because they are specific about their communities in a way that the Licking County Library System is a lot different than the Columbus Metropolitan Library System. So those kinds of things can't really be made on a decision basis across the board.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. That's Sasha Griffin. She's a university archivist and special collections librarian at Denison University. She recently wrote a column in the Newark Advocate critical of House Speaker Larry Householder, who wrote a letter to the Ohio Library Council asking that or demanding that programming focused on drag and aimed at young people, teenagers, be canceled at two libraries, one in Delaware County and the other in Licking County. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Also with us, Julia Applegate. She's director for the Equitas Health Institute. That's an LGBTQ health center here in Columbus. You can email us as well at allsides@wosu.org. And Drew, in Delaware, you're on the air. Hi, Drew.
Hi. My husband and I are Delaware residents. We pay our taxes, and we were really pleased to see that this was on the itinerary at our local library. We have three sons, and, you know, we really support this type of education. What bothers me is that the libraries were so easy to cave. I know that there was, you know, these veiled threats of harm being done. But that can be remedied with, you know, a police presence or, you know, that type of thing. So, you know, why it is that their concern over supersede mine? You know, I have an issue with organized religion and religion in general, and I find that offensive. So does that mean that I have a say in having that material pulled or organizations not being able to have their say, you know? So I guess, you know, what I'm saying is they're trying to push us back into the closet and make this a big thing. I'm kind of just disappointed in the library. Okay. That's my point.
All right. Well, Drew, thanks a lot for your call. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
What is your sense, Julia Applegate, about the speed with which the libraries responded after Larry Householder's letter was made public?
Well, it's disappointing. It's really disappointing because they were veiled threats, and there are ways to keep library patrons safe. This was an after-hours event. There weren't any tax dollars being used that would be used in any different way. I mean, it was just utilization of a space. Nobody mm-hmm. was getting paid to do this work. So it's disappointing that the libraries did pull back so quickly from this. I understand that they felt concerned for violence, and that is something I feel concerned about, too. That's something we live with as LGBTQ individuals. So, you know, I wouldn't want any of the youth to be hurt in that situation because of the fear of the homophobia. And it is a real thing. It manifests in violence every day all around the world. So, you know, I'm disappointed in libraries, but what I'm really disappointed in is the community people. Whoever picked up that phone and made that veiled threat, that's who I'm disappointed in. And I'm also angry that the speaker took that as an opportunity to draw more attention to this community in a way that just makes the community feel more scared and threatened. Instead of saying, you know, our libraries are safe spaces. They've always been open to all. That's the whole principle for our libraries. And we should make sure that all people feel safe in those spaces.
Sasha Griffin, the idea of the library and its role really is tied very closely with the fundamental principles of democracy, too, right?
Correct. And one of the things that the Licking County Library had posted was that the reason why they were canceling their event was due to the spread of misinformation. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a really important factor in this whole debate, which is the rise of misinformation and false news that goes through social media, which Householder was a specific player in. He did not have all of the accurate details of the event, yet he still continued to write a letter on his official letterhead, posted to Twitter, posted to Facebook, with some sort of expectation of inciting other folks within his constituency on something that wasn't even accurate.
That's one of the things that really bothered me, is that this is not an issue. He's made an issue of something that isn't an issue. I've been in public health for 20 years. working initially in the HIV crisis, and we used libraries all over the state of Ohio. Lima, you know, really small counties to hold community conversations about living with HIV, and have done that up through the present day to talk about trans identities and questions of queer health. And never once have I had a problem with any library or any patron, ever. So that's the thing that makes me really angry, is that he made this an issue. This was not an issue.
John in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
I am an African-American in the community, and one thing that I want to point out is that no community is a monolith. The African-American community, and we can go down the list. In a democracy, my undergraduate degree happens to have been in political science, so I study democracy very, very carefully. We have rights and responsibilities. We don't only have rights. We also have obligations and responsibilities to our fellow citizens. I remember learning about the golden mean, Aristotle's golden mean, and that is the balancing point between excess on the one hand and defect on the other hand. And I think we always need to sort of keep that in mind when we're having these public policy conversations. Columbus, like our country, has a lot of challenges, and we need to prioritize our values. Here in Columbus, housing is an issue. High unemployment is a major issue. High infant mortality is also a major issue. So I would just encourage folks to kind of put our individual desires in perspective relative to the golden mean, that point between excess and defect, so that we're not overly advocating in areas that we might not be generating the support that we may like. Also, in closing, we're in a period in American society where people are good people, people of goodwill, people like myself. We're trying to decouple or separate adult decisions from pedophilia. That's an issue. We want to make a clear distinction, because we don't want any overlap between well-meaning people and then predatory individuals. And so if we want to allay concerns of the general public, we need to take things like that into consideration.
Okay, John, thank you for your call. I wanted to get back to something you said, Julia Applegate, that wasn't an issue before Larry Householder weighed in on it. And actually it was. I mean, there were people complaining pretty vociferously, at least up in Delaware County. I'm not sure about Licking County if there was the same kind of opposition to it before the Householder letter came out. But I would assume that that's because that's how he heard about it, going on. But then I wanted you to respond, if you will, to what John just said. I mean, he said he wanted to decouple, but it sounded like he was coupling.
Yeah,
this issue brought up pedophilia, and which has really nothing to do with drag. Then people have talked about the sexualization of children and exposing them to drag and that kind of a thing, too. I guess that's what he's getting at, but...
Well, first I'll say to the issue in Delaware, what I meant was not so much that Larry Householder made an issue, but that the issue of libraries being used as spaces for communities to gather, oppressed communities, that has been happening for many, many years and not been a problem, to my knowledge, at least in terms of the coupling, actually, like you said, of pedophilia with any mention of drag, it reflects a deeper problem in our community, where two issues that are completely unrelated have been so closely woven together to perpetuate dangerous stereotypes about typically gay men. And those are not the same thing. Pedophilia is a sexual violation that happens between adults and children, and that has nothing to do with a person's sexual orientation. It has everything to do with an illness and a violation of trust. And it's dangerous to speak those terms together, because it perpetuates this stereotype that's harmful to the LGBTQ community. So yeah, that troubles me a lot to hear that word come up in this conversation, because it has absolutely nothing to do with what we're talking about.
Kyle in Columbus, you're on the air. Kyle, go ahead.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a comment about Householder. You know, back in the fall, early January, when the Republicans couldn't pick a speaker, nobody could come to a consensus and we had all the votes. Behind the scenes, a lot of LGBTQ people in our community quietly supported him because we saw him as the lesser of all evils, or at least hostile to LGBTQ rights. Part of that is his reluctance to bring the Pastor Protector Act to a vote, right? Mm-hmm. So seeing him act in this way and release that letter, really, I know for myself and a lot of people I know in our community, we feel duped. And, you know, it's angering, it's maddening. So I'm really disheartened by all of this.
Kyle, thanks a lot for your call. Sasha Griffin, did you?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that we're forgetting about Householder's letter is that not once in that letter did he say, I have heard from my constituents, or I have received complaints from my, you know, my community members. This letter that he wrote and published came off as his own personal opinion. And as a legislative representative, if we start bending to the will of somebody who is charged with making our laws and allowing them to have an effect on our community libraries, which we protect with our freedom of free speech, I think that the slippery slope here is that his personal opinion should not be that should not be used in that way. I think that that's not ethical, and I think that that is, frankly, an abuse of power.
Julianne in Reynoldsburg, you're on the air. Hi, Julianne.
Hello. This struck me as very much on the wrong side of history. Back in 69, there was a black studies class in my high school that was overridden by administration because of fear. My mother's reaction was to have me read all the books and discuss them with her. But I think that in the long term, at least I'm praying that it will be the same thing. There's nothing wrong with learning about drag. I mean, it's not harming anyone.
Julianne, thanks for your call. I appreciate it.
Off the air.
Take care. We have to say goodbye to Julia Applegate, Director for the Equitas Health Institute and LGBTQ Health Center in Columbus. Julia, thanks for your insights today. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Sasha Griffin, University Archivist and Special Collections Librarian at Denison University. She recently wrote a column in the Newark Advocate critical of Larry Householder's letter to the Ohio Library Council. If you have a question or comment, want to join the conversation, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Coming up, we're going to hear from the president of the Citizens for Community Values. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the role of libraries in our communities after Republican Ohio House Speaker Larry Householder sent a letter in May to the Ohio Library Council demanding an end to drag queen educational programming and other pride events at public libraries. Still with us is a university archivist and special collections librarian at Denison University, Sasha Griffin. She wrote a column in the Newark Advocate critical of Householder's letter. Aaron Baer is the president of Citizens for Community Values. He joins us now by phone. Welcome back, Aaron.
Hey, thanks, Ann.
You posted on Twitter last week. You said, not wanting drag to be taught to kids is not the same as being against the safety of LGBT people. Stop the hyperbole. What did you mean by that?
You know, really what we saw when Speaker Householder sent this letter that we thought was right on point. There was a lot of sort of over-the-top rhetoric that he opposed LGBT people or he didn't support their safety, which was some of the things we saw. which couldn't be farther from the truth. There's a massive chasm between, not wanting LGBT people to be safe and not thinking it's appropriate for drag, which is a sexualized sort of culture, to be taught to children in a public library. We think that's a pretty common sense position to recognize there's a big difference there. And that was what we were trying to get across is, listen, we can disagree on this, but let's try to speak on common terms.
How do you respond? I mean, when you're talking about programming for a library, given what Erin Baer just said, Sasha Griffin, what's your response?
Well, the American Library Association, and I'm referencing them a lot because they're the ones who are accrediting library schools. They're the ones who are helping librarians and libraries work with advocacy, with legislators. But they have published a Library Bill of Rights. And one of the things that they specifically say is that libraries, which make exhibit spaces or meeting rooms available to the public that they serve, they should make those facilities available on an equitable basis, regardless of the beliefs or affiliations of individuals or group requesting that use. And coupled with that idea of librarians understand their community, librarians understand their library users, I kind of think that this whole idea of putting all of this just on the topic of LGBTQIA is a little bit narrow, because this is a transcending issue. This isn't only about LGBT. This is also about the appropriateness of who the libraries serve.
So this, it's a slippery slope.
Indeed.
In other words, mm-hmm. And Erin Baer, do you see it as a slippery slope? I mean, where do you draw the line? So you call it sexualized, the idea of drag. A lot of people disagree with that, as I'm sure you know. But be that as it may, that's someone's opinion and point of view taking precedence over others.
So I think, and again, it's funny, we're actually advocating for free speech bills on college campus right now. But
right.
I think we can recognize we can recognize, though, that there's different contexts, and I think we would all recognize there are certain types of events that we don't think would be appropriate at a public library. You know, an outright, you know, stripping expose where people are getting nude in the library.
Well, that's, of course, that's illegal in any place, Erin Baer.
But my point with that is that we would agree there is a limit. So when Sasha's suggesting, and when the American Library Association is suggesting that we, you know, it's provided equitably to all people, they're even recognizing that there are limits on this. And what we're saying, what we're arguing, I think what householders are arguing, and what, you know, the community backlash that you saw with this is arguing, is that drag is a more obscene type of performance, if you want to call it performance. It's a more obscene type of activity, and especially when it's targeted at children, it doesn't deserve the same speech protections that other type of speech would.
Well,
now, by all means, LGBT people can reserve the library for other types of events or meetings, and that's happening all the time. And you're not hearing groups like CCV or any of these other activists saying, hey, no LGBT people at the library or no LGBT people meeting at the library. But this type of event that's targeted at children, this is where the community started speaking up. And you especially saw it in Delaware. And then you started seeing it in Newark as well.
Can I make a quick clarification? The event in question in Newark, it was not a drag event. It was an arts and crafts event with an idea that the people, the teenagers who want to celebrate their individuality, would be able to come and make things and create things that they could then use throughout Pride Month and throughout the Pride events that were happening in Licking County. So I do want to just make sure that we're aware and that the public is aware. And I think this is part of that misinformation that the library, the Licking County Library, was struggling with, that it's not just about drag. It is about serving a community group that has traditionally not been as served as other groups.
So, Erin Baer, is that something that you find objectionable? So it's not drag related. It was about putting together this and that to use in celebrating Pride Month.
So again, this is where I think you're splitting hairs here, and I just don't think it's being completely transparent. And this is why, because on the front end, we heard this, that this is an arts and crafts event. It's an arts and crafts event. We're celebrating just Pride Month. But then we're going to bring in a drag queen to teach children how to do drag makeup. But this isn't sexual, they kept saying. This isn't sexual. But then we're also going to bring in Equitas Health to teach safe sex. So which is it? Is it not sexual and it's not drag and it's just arts and crafts? Or is it arts and crafts and bringing in drag queen to teach drag makeup and bring in sort of sexual education? It sounds like you're saying it both ways, but
But Aaron Bear, what if it was? What if it's can't people just let their kids go to the events they want them to go to, and that's their beeswax and nobody else's, I guess? Where do you draw the line? It's a slippery slope, right?
Absolutely. And this is no one's suggesting that these speech issues are easy. But what we're saying is that, and this is what was appropriate about Larry Householder's letter, is that the community of Ohio, obviously the community in Newark and in Delaware, we're saying this is not a good use of a taxpayer space to promote this, and because it was being promoted by the library, and especially something that drag, which we would argue is explicitly sexual and explicitly more obscene than other type of content. Therefore, it shouldn't be allowed there. The library has every right to say, you know what, we're not going to host this event here. People can host it other places, and parents can take their kids there.
Right, but that's just to be clear, that's not the point of view of the libraries. The libraries allowed these events to take place because they don't see them as sexualization. But let's hear from Mark in Dublin right now. Mark, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. I'd like to bring up something that none of your guests have addressed so far, which is the fact that as public institutions that offer meeting space to the public, libraries don't really have the power to deny meeting space to any group, even if it's a controversial group. And libraries, learned this in the late 90s and early 2000s when a white supremacist group tried to achieve notoriety by holding public events at libraries. And they found that they could not deny him at the risk of being sued and losing. And so whether you like these events or not, libraries don't have a right to deny them, and a householder, certainly shouldn't be able to hold, to try and force them to do so at their own legal liability.
Sasha Griffin, is that your understanding how Mark described it?
I think that Mark is really focusing on that black and white piece of it, of what you can and cannot do and where that hard line is. All libraries focus on equal access to information, equal access to any type of information, whether that's community sharing information, whether that's books, anything. And I do agree that, the library as a public space, just like a public street, they don't really have I wouldn't say a right, because I know, Mark, that's what you had mentioned, is that right. But I would say that, they have an obligation, I would say, to be able to serve all of their public, and we don't get to decide who that public is. We don't get to decide who that community is. It is what it is, and it is within that geographic area. I do think that a library cannot deny space, but I think that that's too narrow of a focus for what's going on right now.
Aaron Bear.
Yeah, I think I would actually agree with Sasha on sort of that you need to take a little bit of the more broader context look at this. I would also, though, add on to it from our perspective that when you're talking about speech protections, again, this gets to the point we were talking about earlier. We're talking about a line with speech, especially when it comes to what the Supreme Court has called obscenity. And so there is a line of obscene speech of any of a certain kind doesn't have the same protections as other speech. Mm-hmm. And so So again, there is a line there. I think we're having a little bit of a disagreement here about where that line's at.
And whether,
And we think that the library as a public space would have the ability to say, hey, you know what, this is on the other side of that line.
Pam in Westerville, you're on the air. Hi, Pam.
Good afternoon. I'm pleased to speak with you. I read Ms. Griffin's article online and submitted a attaboy to her and attagirl so that she knew that I supported her. I am a native of Licking County, and I was embarrassed that this happened in my county. A library should be for everyone. We should teach everything in moderation. And if somebody wants to learn more, then they do the research and they learn more and they find other resources. But the library has to be the starting point. They have to provide information.
Pam, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Goodbye. Sasha, we have just a couple minutes left. Let you have a last swipe at this issue and how you move forward from here. I mean, it's obviously not over. There's ongoing disagreement.
I think the biggest advice that I could give is that people within the community should be actively engaged with their library, being involved with the events, checking out the events calendar on a regular basis, seeing what's happening. I think that if people looked at the bigger events offerings that are provided, that they would see the diversity that the library is representing. I think that everybody who has opinions about what the library should or shouldn't provide services for needs to go into the library and just take a look and see who is using it and why are they using it. And you can ask the director. They have metrics on who their groups are and who's using it. And that's one of the things that I requested from Representative Householder is I really want to charge him to be able to go into the library and have some of these experiences.
And Aaron Baer, thanks so much for joining us today. I'll let you have the last word. What do you think?
Well, I think Sasha and I actually agree on a lot of these things. I couldn't agree more in terms of people need to be more involved in the library. I love our Columbus Library, the Parsons Library, or the Grant Library, which my three-year-old calls the fishy library because they have the fish tanks there. Mm-hmm. We love our libraries, and I think, though, what you saw both in Delaware and in Newark was people being involved and recognizing that this type of drag content is not appropriate for kids and is not what schools should be doing, and that's why we and so many other people, we put out a letter yesterday for people to sign on. We already have more than 400 sign-ons of people thanking Larry Householder for doing this because we think his message was the right message, that this isn't appropriate for kids.
Aaron Baer, president of Citizens for Community Values, thanks for joining us. I appreciate your time.
Hey, thanks, Ann.
Sasha Griffin, university archivist and special collections librarian at Denison University in Granville. She recently wrote a column for the Newark Advocate, critical of Larry Householder's letter to the Ohio Library Council, critical of programming at the Delaware County Library in particular, and also the Newark Library for LGBTQ-related programming, and in one case, a Drag 101 course for teens. Thanks again, Sasha.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks to everybody for your calls. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.